Welcome to Exploration 1, Lecture 9. Okay, has anybody got any general questions before we continue on to the stuff for the lecture and that sort of stuff?
That's Jason. What are your thoughts on my gateway issue there? This is where
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just for the recording, this is where in the lab, and I can't remember if it was one or two, I think it was two, I removed my default route from the command line and then added it back in, and it added back in just fine, but then when I rebooted my machine, the route was actually gone. When I went into network properties for my wireless adapter, everything else was there, my static IPs, my DNS, and everything, but my gateway was gone. I had to add it back in. Any idea why?
Because when you add a route in from the command line, unless you tell it that it is persistent, it will be lost on a reboot. If you actually add the default gateway back in through the control panel, it's considered a persistent route. So if you've got a static IP, when you actually add the route back in and you don't tell it's persistent, you'll lose it on the reboot, whereas most people have got DHCP, which hammers it back in for them anyway. So that's why you lost it.
Ah, okay. That works. Thanks.
Alrighty. So that's why that one didn't work. So there is actually an option for route that actually tells it whether the route is going to be persistent. And if you actually tell it that it's a persistent route, it is actually saved in the registry. Now, when you do it through the control panel, it actually saves the route as persistent in the registry because most people don't want their default gateway resetting itself. But it is actually possible if you do a route add 0.0.0.0 yada 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 from the command line to only have that route sit in there until you actually reboot the computer, and that could be useful in certain scenarios. Now, has anybody here heard of, and I'll cover this, it's not actually in the course notes, but I think it's quite useful, has anybody heard of the command netsh?
It's a really cool command.
No, I have not.
Ah, well, anyone else heard of it?
No, not me either.
Okay, netsh is one of these commands that is around in Windows and nobody really tells you about it until somebody does. And what you can do with netsh is you can reconfigure and rejigger the entire network stack. So, for example, if I go netsh dump greater config.txt, I now have a text file that contains my entire network configuration for the current machine. All adapters, all settings, all interfaces. If I want to get that setting back, I do a netsh space exec space config.txt and it will put it all back.
It's powerful when I was at a previous job. Netsh space W space R space C will reset your WinSock catalog. That's when I used it.
That's interesting. Why would I need to do that, Corey? Just curious.
When I was doing tech support for that internet company I was with, you'd be surprised how many subscribers somehow corrupt their WinSock and just cannot get an IP no matter what. And reinstalling TCP/IP doesn't fix it.
Viruses can do it. If you get a nasty virus that hoses the network stack, you can add and remove all of the network cards until the cows come home, but until you actually reset the WinSock stack, they'll never get an IP from DHCP. The other reason this utility is good is you can actually dump the configuration for specific interfaces. So you can dump the configuration for your local Ethernet or for your wireless or whatever, and you can actually have a home wireless configuration, a work wireless configuration, a Starbucks wireless configuration, and then you can actually have shortcuts on the desktop that point to netsh exec and the name of the configuration file, and you can just hit enter on home, wireless, or work, a bit like profiles for the Mac. And yes, that stuff is integrated into Windows 7 and stuff, but this is another way of doing it. If you execute netsh from a command prompt, you get a netsh prompt, and you can type help, and it will give you all sorts of help on all of the different commands. And there are commands to control the firewall, and you can also go command space question mark, and it'll tell you what that command can take. So very, very useful utility that not many people know about, and it's good for all of the Windows from XP onwards. I don't have any idea. I think it's in 2000. I don't know whether it's in 95, 98, and I'm not quite bored enough to boot our 98 virtual machine to find out.
If memory serves, I do not believe it is in 95, 98.
Alrighty. Now, let's have a look. We want to... So that's the gateway question. Now, has anybody got questions? I think some people had some questions on the default gateway lab. I'm probably going to rejig that to actually work with the remote bundle, but the idea was that you could actually set up two serial interfaces, but given the complexity of that, it was probably worth reading through and understanding what happened. But if you did want to set up a two or three router topology, that would certainly be possible. We can put the bits and pieces in there. I can certainly go through showing people how to configure a network interface on the routers if that's something that people would want to look at.
I would like to see
that. The lab as it
I
was.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, I would too. The lab as it was written, though, just it looked like it just had you go onto a router, set up an interface, and then ping it and do an ARP on it, right? Like, it didn't have you doing the topology, did it? At least I didn't see it.
No, it didn't. And the problem is, if I put in the topology stuff, that will make the lab more complex. Whether anybody feels happy about that or not remains to be seen, but if I do modify it up to do a topology, we'll be going in and configuring two routers and pinging between them, and that will be more work. So here's fair warning. It might be more work, but it might be kind of useful, so who knows?
Oh, I'd love to have that set up if you could do it.
Yeah, should be easy enough. Okay. Let's see if my virtual audio cable amazingness is going to work so that I can show you guys this. Any other questions before I get started on that? Apparently, the proverbial halogen has gone on a bit for Jason with subnetting. Has anybody else had any... eureka moments with subnetting, or are some people still struggling with the underlying concepts?
Well, I was thinking this week I have good intentions of tackling the text files, the exercises, but I wanted to ask you this week, there was talk last week that you, I think you were mentioning maybe beefing up the subnetting hints file, adding some things we talked about last week, and I wanted to ask if those files had been modified since I pulled them down about 3 weeks ago.
No, they haven't been updated yet, although what I did find bouncing around on my server was a thing called understandingipaddressing.htm, which one of the students gave to me about 3 or 4 years ago, so I'll be jamming that up in the documentation section. I remember it being exceedingly good. So I'm going to reef that off my file server at home, because I remember stashing it away. It was done by 3Com, and it actually doesn't have any pictures and stuff in it. So... Certainly, that will go up, and I will finish doing the subnetty hint stuff. I'm just a bit wary of putting too many shortcuts in, because what I find is that people get confused by my shortcuts, because obviously I've been doing it for a while. I can take shortcuts and go, oh yes, well this looks like this, so we do this and we do this. I'm just not sure whether that is going to be more of a help or more of a hindrance.
Oh, that's fair enough, and I'm happy to tackle what's there. If you could ping us on announce or something when you add that that other file, that would be great. We'll go grab it.
Certainly. That's certainly possible. I'll ping you all on announce and let you guys know that. You'll also notice that the reason you guys didn't get the announcement of the forensics thing was I posted it to the wrong announce list. When I posted it to the right announce list, you all got it. Okay, let's see if this thing's going to work for me.
Yeah, what I'm realizing very quickly about this subnetting thing is there's about 50 different ways to accomplish the same thing, and you're getting to the same result, but as I've been doing more research on the internet, it looks like there's there's a ton of different ways to get to the same result.
We actually thought that perhaps... Kevin and I were talking about this last night, actually. Maybe an abacus would be a good tool for keeping track of your subnetting if we could get one that was at least 8 digits wide. And that way you could do your binary conversion by sliding the beads. I wonder if we could lobby for an abacus in exams.
It's an interesting thought. Jason, was there a particular resource that you found that helped you to reach your epiphany that you might want to share with us?
Let's just say I found some Cisco training materials, third-party training materials. Not sure if I can necessarily broadcast them far and wide, though.
Fair enough.
Understood.
We can talk.
If we open a copy of TerraTerm, obviously everything's slightly laggy now because we're running it through virtual audio cables. I can probably reduce that lag, but we'll get some breakup if I do, so let's not. I'm just going to do this. Actually, let's do this. No. There we go. You guys don't need to see my... you don't need to hear my quitter going off. Now, if anybody wants to know how to do that, it's Control Windows M in case you're in a presentation and you need to turn your Twitter off. Okay, we have TerraTerm. I'm going to go into the 144 address, which is the address I get for the remote bundle. And we want to telnet in, obviously. They've got a password prompt that it doesn't read, so we'll go into pod 1. Okay, here we are. We are in the remote bundle. Now, is anybody having any trouble with the control Bs and stuff to break back, or is everybody getting that to work no problems at all?
That's worked well for me.
Yeah, it's fine.
Alrighty. So, let's /C3 to go into router 3. Can everybody handle keyboard echo on words? Because I really don't want characters on this recording. I'll just kind of say what I'm putting in because it's quicker. Now, the other thing you want to watch out for is with TerraTerm, you want to turn your punctuation up to most or all, so that you can hear the type of prompt. So as you can hear at the moment, we've got chocolate greater than, which is non-privileged exec mode. If I enable, you'll see that I've got a number sign prompt. So guys, girls, whoever's listening to this recording, turn your punctuation up for TerraTerm specifically if you can, with whatever screen reader you're using. I have no idea whether there's an app-specific module for NVDA that will let us do that at this point in time, but at least it's something to be aware of. Now, have I spoken about enable modes and stuff before? Hang on, we have to retract.
No.
Not that I remember, no.
Ah, I did that last term and I haven't done it yet, so I'll do that now. When you're on the router, there are basically two different modes of operation. You have a user mode, which is like a regular mode where you can do a few show commands and stuff. And then you have what we call privileged execution mode, which allows you to actually change the configuration of the router. Now, on a Unix-based operating system, the prompts for this are a dollar and a number sign, but on Cisco, the prompts are a greater than or and a number sign. I don't think Cisco refers to it as the chevron prompt. That's a deck thing. Now, at the moment, I'm enabled at the moment, so I'll just disable. You'll see that I'm at a chocolate greater than prompt. If I press question mark to get some help, okay, So as you can see, it's giving me a list of commands, and it's got dash dash more dash dash at the bottom of that page. This is similar to the more pager under Linux. Enter will give you the next line, spacebar will give you the next screen. If I hit spacebar, okay, so that's basically the help screen. I realize that's probably a bit fast, but did people get some of that, like the odd command here and there? I didn't expect you to understand all of it. Do I need to slow eloquence down a bit?
No, that's good. We can read it later.
Just going to make sure that... is anybody else recording? Because I had better start. What is with me in my lectures? I must have this subconscious desire not to record them. I'm going to have to do a record your lecture hypnosis or something. I'll start recording just from here on in, just in case bad things TM happen. I just forget to hit the record button. Okay, now we're recording. Let's go back in here. Okay, so as you guys can see, that shows a help screen. Now, the fact is that most of us, and I shouldn't really admit to this, but most of us don't really remember how to use a Cisco router because there are so many commands and there are so many permutations. And whilst we need to know the base stuff, we don't remember every single nuance because there is what we call interactive help. Now, the first thing I want to show you, however, though, is that's the list of commands that is available in... the non-privileged exec command. If I enable, and I press question mark now, we've got lots of stuff here. But one of the things you can do with this thing is you can go, okay, CL question mark.
CL question, clear clock, chocolate number CL.
Okay, so my two options are clear and clock. If I go E,
E question, clear, chocolate number E.
Okay, it says my only command is clear. If I hit tab,
tab chocolate number clear.
It actually completes the command out, and then I can go question mark.
Question mark, clear, clock, access, clear, access, 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 access.
Okay, so let's say I want to clear the counters on all interfaces just because I can. Clear COU. And I've just hit tab to complete it out. And it says I can also just press the carriage return to clear all counters. So let's do that. And yes, I do, so Y enter. And I've cleared all the counters on the interfaces. Okay, so as you just discovered, I didn't actually know how to clear the counters before I got started on this. I just worked it out because of the context-sensitive help. And this is invaluable when you are configuring a Cisco, that you can hit tab to try and get completion for your commands, and you can hit question mark to find out what commands are actually valid at this point in time. So say, for example, we want to configure the router. So I'm going to go config. Okay, so I know the command is configure, so I can either hit space because I've got enough to make it unique, or I can hit tab to complete it out. And then I can hit question mark. So I want to configure from the terminal, so I'll go configure terminal. So enter commands one per line, end with control Z. Okay, I want to look at my interfaces, for example. So I go... I'm going to shorten these up because it's quicker to type. Instead of typing interface. FA tab. Question mark. Okay, so I can go 0-2, so I go 0. It's telling me I want a slash, and then I go question mark again. And then I can go 0-1 for the sub-interfaces, so I go 0. Okay, now I'm in the interface configuration for Fast Ethernet 0. Now I can get help here. Let's not go through all of that, but you get the idea. So let's go IP address. Okay, 123.123.123.123.123. So it wants the net mask, so I'll go 255.255.255.0. So I can either make it at a secondary IP or I can make it the primary IP. I'm going to make it the primary IP address for the moment. Now I'm going to type end. Okay, now if I want to look at the configuration I just put in, I go show int fa 0/0, and there's a space between fa and 0/0. Okay, you get the idea. Lots of stuff there. So let's just look at something I want to really bring to your attention, though. Fast Ethernet 0/0 is up. Line protocol is up. What that means is that the interface is administratively up, and it also means that I have a connection on that interface to something that's providing link beat. So in other words, I have a cable plugged in. So line fast Ethernet 0/0 is up, line protocol is up, we're good. Now if I want to take fast Ethernet 0/0 down,
easy.
I do it like this. Oh. Config
T.
Int fa 0/0 shut down. So you can get the idea, it's now set to administratively down and it's changed the line protocol to down. Sorry, it's breaking those up a little bit. So if I now show the status of fast Ethernet 0/0.
Show.
Show int fa.
0/0.
See, administratively down, line protocol down. Any questions?
Gary, were you using the end instead of the control Z? Was it the same thing?
Yes, it is the same thing. Usually in text files you put end if you're actually putting the configurations into text files rather than actually pressing the control Z, because end can mean end of file mark. Sorry, Corey, you had a question?
Just when you're typing in those commands and you're typing, like, shows, you're hitting show tab, int tab, fa tab, 0/0, is that right?
No, you only have to type enough of the commands to be unique, although it's generally a good idea for students to type out the full command names where it makes sense. So what I'd encourage students to do is go show fa tab. Oh, of course it is. Okay, so I just hit tab and you'll hear it says fast Ethernet, and then I can go 0/0.
Okay. So you're typing show int all together as one word, and then tab, and then fa, or are you typing it all together, like show int fa tab?
It's actually three words. Show, space, INT, space, and then the interface name. So I can go, I can actually type SHO, tab.
Show, app, number, show.
It's actually completed that to show. INT, tab.
App, number, show interfaces.
And then I can go FA.
App, number, show interfaces, that's
and then I can go 0/0. So I've just went SHO, tab. And that puts in a space as well. INT, tab, will complete that out to interfaces. And then I can go FA, tab, that'll complete that out to fast Ethernet. And then I can go 0/0.
Oh, okay. So pretty much as a beginner, it's recommended to use tab to make sure you get what you want. But if you know what you're doing, you could just hit space and type shortcuts.
That's exactly right. It also means your brain is going to remember show interfaces, whereas show int might not stick as much, and you might botch it up like I just did.
Okay. I see why I want Syscopedia.
Yeah, you do. Because you can actually get certain bits of command help, but to pull it out of the help system, it's a lot easier to actually get it categorized into Syscopedia. Now, if I want to bring this interface back up, because obviously you guys will get a little bit confused if I don't. I didn't really need to do that. Configure. Terminal.
Enter configuration commands. One line. Enter CNCL/C. Top left parent contact. Number.
INT. FA. 0/0.
Enter. Top left parent contact. Select number.
No. Shutdown.
Shutdown. Enter. Top left parent contact. Select number.
Now, quiz question. Can anybody tell me why the time is showing as 2:24?
It's not set.
The time zone is actually universal. No, the time is actually set. October 5th is actually correct.
9:52 a.m. Wednesday, 5 October 2011.
Yes, October 5th is actually correct. It's just currently set to Greenwich. I haven't actually overridden the time zone. I did actually set the clocks on the routers just to make it that much more realistic. Okay, guys, so... Now, one of the other things we can do here is we can go end. Just drop
yourself
back. Now, those things that are coming out that are saying Oct 5, blah, 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 they are actually logging messages. And when you actually get advanced, you can tell it where it's going to log its messages, whether it's going to show them on the console, how many it buffers, all of that sort of thing. Now, one of the other commands that is really useful is a thing called show version, which will show you what you've got in your router and how many interfaces. So if I go...
Oh. Version center, yes, assigned in. System software, 2800 software, left 2800 and a half. Security 99 left third, version 0.4 left third, 11 left 32. Reset software, left third, FC4 left third, copyright left third, Z right third, 1986. Technical support colon, http://www.cisco.com/tech support. Copyright left third, Z right third, 1986-2007, ISO system. Sync compiled on 30-0717-36IPR, on underline 11-19. ROM code system bootstrap, version 0.4 left third, 13R right third, DLC software, left third, FC1 right third. Job left time is 2 weeks, 6 days, 19 hours, 52 minutes. System returned around the power and system image file was
Okay, so you get the idea. It basically raves on about the encryption support that's in here. But then if you go on to the next
page.
Okay, so that's the basic configuration of the router, and you can actually look up what the configuration registers and stuff mean in the actual Syscopedia, but at this point it's not that important. What I do want to show you guys is the routing table on this router at the moment, which has got one Ethernet interface configured. So I'm going to go show IP
route.
Okay, now let's go through the important stuff here. Okay, so 123.123.123.0/24 is subnetted, one subnets. That's important because we've only got one subnet on the router. C means it's directly connected. It actually said that at the top, but I wouldn't blame anybody from not remembering that. And it says that that router, that route is directly connected to fast Ethernet 0/0. So that is the only router we have, the only route we have on that network. So we can only talk to the 123.123.123.0 subnet. Now, if we look above here, it'll say gateway of last resort is not set. Now, the gateway of last resort is basically the default route where the router doesn't know how to get to anything else. So if we try to ping anything that's off this network, we should get a failure. Let's try. Let's ping 192.168.1.1. Ping 192.168.1.1. As you can see, we didn't end up managing to get any packets back at all. But if I ping the router's own IP address... As you can see, all of the pings came back. Go ahead.
Can you explain, like, what fast Ethernet 0/0 is? I mean, I understand, like, on a Unix box what, you know, ETH 0 means, but... what's the /0?
As far as I know, it is interface 0, sub-interface 0. It's possible if you've got, like, a Wix card that... which are the very expensive cards that go into Cisco's, you can actually have multiple Ethernet interfaces on the one card, and what would happen is you would have, say, 6 or 7 or 8 Ethernet ports, and you'd have 0/0, 0/1, 0/2, 0/3, 0/4, 0/5, 0/6, and 0/7. But as it stands, we have fast Ethernet 0/0, which is the first Ethernet port on the router, and fast Ethernet 1/0 is the second Ethernet port on the router, which is a completely separate network. If you know any better than I do, Kevin, feel free to correct me, but that's my understanding. And if you don't know, that's okay too.
Hello. So that's pretty much right, although if the router has more than one card, then like a different card would be a 1/ and whatever it had on that card. But pretty much what you said was right.
Alrighty. So that is how fast Ethernet 0/0 and stuff works. Now, I don't know how much more mucking around we want to do on the routers. That obviously gives people a feel of... now, obviously, backspace erases things. Control-U will clear your command line, which is always handy. I use that one a lot because I can't type very well sometimes. You can also... One thing I would suggest students do at least once in their lifetime is to do a reload. Let's show you what a reload looks like.
Reload enter system configuration that is modified. Save left bracket, /no right bracket, colon. And enter receive reload left bracket, confirm right bracket. Y enter.
And here it goes.
Start 5-32-24.647, colon, percent, /5-low, colon, load requested by console, load reason, colon, load command.
And the router is rebooting.
System bootstrap, version 12.4, left parent, 13, right parent, software, left parent, C1, right parent, technical support, colon, HTTP, colon, /www.cisco.com/tech support, copy, left parent, C, right parent, 2006, ISO system, initializing memory, release, ETC, 2811, platform with 262,144 bytes of main memory is configured to 64-bit mode, ECC, enabled, upgrade, run, initialize, program, load, complete, endpoint, colon, 0, 8000,
Now, as you'll notice, it takes a while for it to boot up. Do not be in a hurry when you turn on a Cisco. Okay, that's
like
enough number.
Progress bar or something?
Yes, that's the decompression progress. I'm silencing a lot of this. Basically, what happens is it actually puts a whole row of numbers as an image across the screen, and you will actually see. Yes, the actual compressed image of the iOS is stored in Flash, and a lot of the modern routers actually decompress that into RAM and run it from there. And there we go, we're back up at a router prompt. Does anybody... I mean, obviously you guys are going to have to play with this yourselves to really get the feeling of how this works and stuff. Does anybody have any sort of questions or clarifications on any of that? That was actually a longer router demo than I intended, but probably necessary if you guys really want to fiddle with these default routes and stuff.
I think it's more interactively helpful than, say, a Linux console can be. I did have a question, though, about authentication. Like, when you type enable, it doesn't prompt for a password. Is there a reason?
Because I haven't set one. Okay, so if I set an enable password, let's go and do that. So, enable. Config. T. Enable secret class and disable. It helps to turn off the no DNS lookup, otherwise commands you mistype will do that. Now, if I enable now...
Enable enter password colon. Enter password colon. Class enter. Enter shop number.
There we are. It now has a password.
Oh, okay. So the password then is class, is what you did, right?
Yes, it was. Obviously, I'll take that password off, because otherwise it'll confuse people. I could actually reload the router at this point and not save the configuration, and the password will disappear. Although, if I want to take the password off... I can go configure terminal. No, enable secret. And the password is now gone. Now, say for example, I want to change the host name because I'm sick of chocolate. I can go config T host name ice cream. And I've now changed the visible host name of the router as far as the router is concerned.
And enter ice cream number.
And it's
called chocolate. That is very cool.
Anything else anybody wants me to cover on the router-y stuff before I flick back to regular microphone use and start killing off repeaters with extreme prejudice? Okay. And I don't know who asked that, so I'll just do it anyway, because I can't be bothered alt-tabbing. Tab completion will complete out the commands if it is unique. So if I go S-H-O-W... Oops, no. S-H-O, tab. It's now completed that out to show. Now, if I reach across onto the Braille display, it doesn't show me that. Yes, it does. Show. There we go. I just had to route JAWS to PC and bring it down to the bottom. Now, if I go Control-U, if I go S-H-O question mark, the only possibility is show, so that means that that command is actually unique. But if I were to go CL, now if I hit Tab, it won't complete it out. If I hit question mark, it tells me that I've got clear or clock. So, question mark will show you what your options are, tab will try and complete it out to whatever you happen to have that is complete at the moment, and it won't succeed until you've got enough characters to be unique. Does that answer the question potentially?
Why can't there be such a thing in Linux?
Well, there is. Tab completion in Linux. Let me show you. There is tab completion in Linux. I don't know what you're all on about. Watch this.
No. The question mark, please.
Well, there doesn't need to be a question mark, because let me show you what happens if you try question mark under Linux. This will be really nasty, and you'll understand why they don't have it. Here we go. Okay.
Control key is connected. Quick status folder version 3.0. Slash C5. Enter. Connected 0.5 colon WKS1. That is connected. Enter colon care key. Enter. 11.10 WKS1-0 WKS1 login colon.
All right.
Copy. Enter. Password colon. Copy. Enter. Last login colon. 5705 14 WST 2011-0 Linux WKS1-2.6.
Here we are.
Copy. WKS1 colon 0.
How about I press tab?
Tab.
Okay, nothing.
Tab. Display all 1,499 possibilities. Left there, right, right there.
Would you like me to show all 1,499 possibilities?
Oh, wow.
Okay, but it doesn't have to be that bad. So let's say, for example, I go MK. Oops, hang on.
MK, right there.
Copy. No, I don't want to show those.
Space.
MK, tab.
MK, tab.
Then if I go FS and hit tab again,
FS, tab.
Well, it does find them as quickly as the router does. It's just the fact that it's actually got to scan the directories to find out what they are. So the first time it's going to take a little while to actually rat them up, but then the second time it's going to find them quite quickly. Now, there are help things for Linux. Once you've got a command, say for example, mkfs.ext3, you go dash dash help after the command name. Okay, got all that. There'll be a quest. There'll be a test on that next week. Now, in all seriousness, though, Linux is just friendly. It's just picky who it's friendly with. So if we actually want to look at how that command works, let's look at its manual page. Man. Yeah. mkfs.ext3.
And there's the
main page. We can shut that up. Okay. Now, what I want people to think about, and this is purely an idea in brainstorming stage at the moment, and this is not quite relevant to the lecture, but I'll put it here anyway. If we were to run a Linux course, so if we were to run a Linux course, can we sense the uncertainty here? What sort of things would people actually want to learn? Do you want to learn basic system administration? Do you want shell scripting? Do you want a GUI? Do you want Perl? What sort of things would people be interested in as far as a Linux course if we were to look at doing one? Because Linux is such a big animal, we'd need to figure out what people were actually interested in. And we're just getting ideas at the moment to see what sort of direction we might possibly be able to take a Linux course in. But obviously, you know, ideas as what people wanted to cover would be kind of cool. Now, the other thing I want to quickly go through while I'm sitting here at a Linux prompt, because it does occur to me that this could be useful, is how do we configure an Ethernet interface under Linux? We need to be the super user to do that. If I hit enter, am I the super user?
No,
I am not. So let's sudo space su. Okay, so we'll go there. So that's now we're at the prompt. So as you can see, I've got a number prompt. Can you guys talk about this later? I do. I do, but I'll catch him next week or whatever. It's not urgent. I'm just brainstorming for ideas. It's just there's a hell of a demand for a Linux course, and a lot of people want one, and either we look at running one through here, or I'm going to do it independently. Well, we'll work something out, but yeah, just a lot of people want a Linux course, and we're not going to run... We'll talk about that at some point. It's just we're trying to figure out what people are actually interested in, because I think we'd have like 50, 60, 80, 100 students that would want to do a Linux course. It's huge. So, we'll look at that. Okay. Sorry, guys, I'm back with you. So, at the moment, I'm sitting at a... I have a new mail as a super user. I'd say there's something that's emailing cron jobs out on the virtual machine. I should really fix that up. Alright, so if I want to have a look at the configuration of Ethernet 0 on this box, I do an ifconfig Okay, so that's the configuration of F0. Now, if I want to look at the routing table on this box, I can do a route-n. And there are no routes at all. That's interesting. There should have been. I'm officially confused. Okay. We'll come back to that. Now, obviously... Did anybody notice that I put a new virtual machine of Ubuntu up on the website?
No, I didn't see that.
I don't think I've officially announced it. I spoke about it last week, so it may have been something that was glossed over, which is completely understandable. There is a Ubuntu 10.04.3 virtual machine up on the website. If you get that, it's got all of working repositories, and you can apt-get install T-Shark and all of that sort of good stuff. It doesn't have DWWW or Apache on it. That is left as an exercise for the student. I may make a bigger one that does have those utilities on it, but that one actually has archives and repositories and everything that link up and work, and you will be able to install and remove packages. I will warn you, however, that its hard drive can expand to up to 10 gig in size. It's not 10 gig when you get it, it's like a gig or so, but keep in mind that you will need a bit of grow room if you start installing stuff onto it.
That's Ubuntu server, Kerry?
Yes, it is. It's Ubuntu Server 10.04.3. It's the long-term service release, and at this point it is command line only. I don't want to build a virtual machine with X and Orca and Windows, X Windows and stuff, because it would be huge. You'd be downloading like 5 gig of stuff, and we don't have that much bandwidth. If you want to build one of those, I might do instructions on how to build your own one. But yeah, you SSH into it, and by default it's going to get an IP address through NAT, which means that you're going to look in that vnetc.leases file and figure out which IP addresses it's grabbed, and then you SSH into it and control it that way. If you would like to convert it into bridged mode, that is left as an exercise for the student, and then it will turn up on your local network.
No, that's where do great. I find that? That's great. Leave the rest of it to the Vinix people. They've already done the graphical stuff.
Where do I find the VNetC leases file?
It is under your, depending on which Windows you're under, C users / documents and settings, all users, VMware, VNetC.leases. It's under the all users section under a directory called application data VMware. Sorry, I missed one. So it's all users app data VMware.
Cool, thanks.
Believe it or not, and I hate to be a stickler on this, that is actually completely documented in the documentation on the virtual machine resources page. If you actually read that help document on the virtual machine, if you forget what I said, it's actually written in there too, and you can look it up from there as well. So there you go. That way you don't have to like remember that too much. It is actually written down in the machine instructions as to how to find your machine's IP address. Obviously, if you set it to bridge, you will have to figure out from your own DHCP server what got allocated. There is no easy way to see what it got allocated unless you want to start up a network sniffer and look for DHCP requests. That could be an exercise for the student. You could fire up a network sniffer and actually look on port 67 and grab the DHCP request with T-Shark to find out where it showed up. Or perhaps not. But you could try. Okay, any other questions before I turn the pass-through of the virtual audio cables off?
10:17 AM.
Is there anything on Linux that people would like me to show them while I'm sitting here at a prompt? Because this annoying bloke knows all sorts of things and stuff about Linux because he's been using it for 20 years and you guys haven't. So does anybody need me to run through anything that they can think of at the moment? Otherwise, I can go through some more stuff next week.
I know it's probably not really relevant to lecture or anything, but how do you mount or unmount like a drive?
That's fairly easy. We don't actually have any drives we can mount on here, but basically you find out the device name of the drive and you go mount /dev/sdb1/media/hd. And that would mount the second drive onto a folder called /media/hd. You would also have to make sure that that mount point existed. And then to unmount it, you would do a umount. Now, if you're running a graphical version of Ubuntu, I believe GNOME comes with an auto-mounter, and it's likely to auto-mount stuff for you and stick shortcuts to it on the desktop. But if you're not, then you will have to mount those things by hand. If you want to know what devices you have access to, you can do an fdisk-l. Oh, no, that's different. What you've got to do there is you make the virtual machine image, you connect a virtual hard disk to it, and you make sure that it's a SCSI virtual hard disk, which will show up as /dev/sda, and then you run grml to hd, and that will install grml onto the virtual hard disk.
Oh, okay, cool.
Now, I don't know whether anybody's following the discuss list too closely, but would anybody be interested in me redoing my imaging chat with GRML and stuff and covering, you know, how to image up boot partitions and stuff? Would anybody here be interested in attending that one Thursday evening your time to see how we image and restore and mince and slice and dice drives with GRML?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Sounds cool.
And yes, you can even image up a Mac with it. Although the EFI will cause you some interesting fun, but that's neither here nor there. All right, let's exit out of here. Actually, one of the things I did want to show you guys about Linux, which is really handy, just very quickly before I do drop out, Linux has a couple of nifty utilities that you can find out some very interesting stuff. For example, I can find out what sort of processor is in this virtual machine. Okay, you get the idea. I can also find what sort of PCI devices I've got in here. 0.0 So often I use GRML to actually dump a hardware profile of machines I'm looking at. It'll tell me what hardware is installed in it, what sort of things, and often it's smarter about it than Windows is, so I can actually find out what type of wireless card I'm dealing with, and all of that sort of thing. But we can possibly put that into the imaging chat, but I just thought I'd mention that, that it is quite a handy-dandy diagnostic tool.
Enter. Control D, logout. You have 9.10 WKS1 minus 0 WKS1 logout colon. Control D is connected. Put status colon 3.0, side ID colon left there and define right there.
Okay, there we go. Alright, anything else before I switch back to regular key up mode?
I don't think I'm as terrified as Cisco routers as I was. And your dire warning about breaking them and having to fix them doesn't scare me quite as much now that I know about the infamous reload.
Well, this is half the point. I'm just going to flick away from... Okay. Oh, that's better. Now, let's flick JAWS back. Right, now. To kill virtual audio cables with repeaters with extreme prejudice. Okay, there we go. Now, I know nobody will believe me, but if you're not running NUtils, you are seriously missing out. It's incredible. Alrighty. Now, do people want me to go onto the data link layer this morning, or have you all had enough? Because, I mean, it has been a fairly high concentration lecture. It's up to you guys.
I'm not sure I could absorb too much more.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think I might agree with Matthew.
Hang on, I'll put myself on push to talk because this AutoVox is annoying. Ah, there we go. Okay. Alright. Alright, well, I think I might stop it here for this week because I think a few people will be downloading this one and having a listen back through it. Or at least I'd recommend it. If anybody has any queries, questions... I'm going to put that understanding IP addressing.htmm up in the documentation folder, the general instructions under networking. That'll go up after I finished my cream-filled chocolate eclair. And I will also look at fleshing out that networking document this morning a little bit more so you guys have got a bit more. And I will announce on the announce list when those documents have been modified. And that's basically it for the recording, so I'm going to hit stop on the recording and then we can chat for a few minutes on various things and then disappear off in our own directions. So, any questions, queries before I hit stop on recording?
You did mention at one point...
Sorry, John, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you did mention at one point saving the configuration so somebody else didn't walk over your work. Will we cover that at some point in a future lecture?
Yeah, I will do that. The problem is at the moment that you're basically out of machines. Normally you can save the configurations across on the virtual workstations, but at the moment the virtual workstations are too small and they're actually full, and I need to rebuild the entire virtual machine image for the hardware, and I'm going to try to do that in the next week or so, and then you'll be able to TFTP copy them off onto the workstations on the virtual pod. You can actually save them in a log. I could quickly demo that if... Oh, no, I'm going to do it next week because I can't be bothered relaunching all my repeaters again because I'm essentially lazy. It'll take me like 3 minutes to launch all the repeaters again and I'll probably get them wrong. But yes, we will cover it at some point. Basically, what you do in short term is you go into the router and you start logging. So you go File, Start Logging. And then you go back into your terminal window as the enable prompt and you go Show Space Running Dash Config. And you let it come up on the screen and you hit Spacebar until you've got all of it. And then you stop the logging and then you edit out all of the dash dash more dash dashes and the password lines, and then if necessary you can paste that back into a config T on the router, but I will demonstrate how that works possibly next week. Now, as far as lab deadline is concerned, don't panic too much. I'm not going to penalise anybody for being overdue at this point because I've covered stuff in this lecture that is necessary for the Module 5 labs. So if you've done them, that's well and good. If you haven't, or you want more time, or you want to fiddle with them some more, then you've got time to do that. It's just important that all the labs get done by the end of course, but I'm quite happy to slide those deadlines back a little bit and let people come to terms with stuff in their own time, provided we don't run out of it. And hopefully those documents that I'm about to put up on the subnetting will demystify it to a point where you guys can start looking at doing the subnetting exercises and the busy builders. That's the plan anyway.
Carry the labs folder on the QCAT server. I just want to know, make sure I understand what I'm seeing there. Where you have the directories up through Chapter 6, I assume that means that those are ones that you've modified and are happy with, and I see there's only a single one in 6, which is what I was going to tackle this week. And then I see the miscellaneous files at the top directory, and I haven't looked at those, but am I assuming correctly that those are ones that either we don't use or that you haven't modified yet?
They are the ones that are unmodified. All of the unmodified labs sit in the root of the folder, and when they are modified, they are copied into a particular chapter directory with a dash modified on the end of them. And you'll find that, if you look again now, there should be 2 modules for Chapter 6 now because I modified another one last night.
Okay, fair enough. Well, it looks like I interpreted the system correctly. Thanks.
I should probably put a README to that degree in. I suppose I could move all of the miscellaneous files into a thing called unmodified, which would probably be cleaner. And I will probably do that later, but I just hadn't got to it yet. So that might clear up the directory a little bit and not confuse people so much.